Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Okay, initial thoughts off the back of the Grand Prix while the usual theme tune is playing in the background. Interesting. Going to have to read a bit more into quite what McLaren were doing with their strategy because, well, Piastri had the overall hand coming into this race, launched it off the start, had the control of the race for most half of it, and now... interesting tactics and team orders. I'm sure his manager, Mark Webber, will have been biting his nails down to the quick. So, great work from both McLaren drivers, getting the swap done, but this sets up for an interesting season, especially as McLaren now overhauls Ferrari in the constructor standings too. Plus, Max tumbling down the order. This big points gap now for Norris to make up too. Interesting stuff.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 13th race of the Formula One 2024 season, the Hungarian Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albastaly and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm good, thank you. I had a pretty chill weekend, just debunnied the garden because we no longer have any, sadly, any bunnies.
So that wasn't code for she brutally murdered them. That was just after the event.
Yeah. Sort of post sad passing.
Just in case anyone was worried about what she meant by debunking the garden.
It's great we started this off on a really light topic as well.
Well, it's not going to get much better, really, is it?
Certainly if you're not a Lando Norris fan.
The bunnies died a while back. And now, because they loved to escape and dig holes and just cause mayhem, we had to just fully bunny-proof the garden. So now we're in the I'm in the process of debunnying it. And then Sunday was just a nice self-care day. It was just meant to be a passing comment, but now it seems just a bit morbid.
Yeah. Timo, how was your weekend? How have you been since we last spoke?
I had a slightly more hectic weekend, I feel like, in some ways. I was at the Formula E in London, as mentioned in our preview episode, so I was busy running around doing everything there and weirdly seeing people for the first time that kind of a bit like this when we did our pub chat, no, that's a difference, that's another podcast, our pub quiz episode when we first all met, and so it was a bit like that really. It's like, oh yes, you, I know you from somewhere, you're shorter than I expected. And all this sort of thing. So it was quite good, and especially getting to be trackside, chat to a lot of the drivers and just watch Mitch Evans's face and see how angry he might have been at any point over the weekend, quite frankly. It seemed to get just dramatically more stone-faced, but I can't really blame him. I'd be a bit miffed too.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of the Formula E back yet, but it seems
to he didn't win.
Yeah, oh, thank you. It seems to have been, let's say, chaotic in the least.
Yes. Jake Dennis really wanted to go all out with, not winning the championship, certainly. He just seemed to be more prioritising other things this weekend.
See, that's the weird thing. I curse every single driver, yet I seem to be Jake Dennis's good luck charm. Because
this weekend?
Well, no, because I wasn't there. When I was there, he won in 2022, and then he won the whole championship in 2023. I don't go, and he causes mayhem.
It was quite amusing seeing other people assigned to have to already talk to him and then figuring out, oh, right, how do we approach this? We're going to have to be creative with some of our questions here to try and not entirely blame him outright because we don't want to annoy him straight away. But yeah, very good weekend overall, and managed to sneak in the Grand Prix and the IndyCar and all the rest of it in and around that. So it was minimal sleep, maximum attack mode, shall we say.
Yeah, IndyCar, I need to catch up on that as well, because there was some
very good race,
fairly hair-raising moments for that one as well, including the somehow chaotic journey of Théo Pourchaire from doing nothing in the south of France to sort of less than 12 hours later being in Toronto, which was genuinely quite impressive. The fact that he managed to turn out a fairly good race off the back of that jet lag.
He was their highest placed driver by the end of that race, which is also the quite amusing thing. There was a very weird weekend for McLaren in every category they raced in.
Yeah, somehow they seem to sort of have a bit of a weird goof in every category they had a race in this weekend. And of course, this weekend they had the Hungarian Grand Prix. I was there, watched that goof live, and I watched, there was quite a few goofs actually from teams, drivers, and officials as well. We'll get into all of this one. So we might as well jump into, crucially, the first bit of news, which did drop today. We are recording this a day later because I wanted to sort of chat about all of this. And I was literally on a plane yesterday evening. But the big news is Binotto is joining Audi. Details on this are a bit thin at the moment. We'll dive into it properly in the next episode because I think we've got plenty to talk about now. But off the back of another torrid weekend for Steak Sauber, Audi, once was Alfa Romeo, God knows what it's going to be next. It's not surprising that maybe they're shaking up the people at the top of the pile. So we'll talk about this more in due course, especially once there's a bit more detail on who's doing what as it goes forward. So we'll jump actually into the race, and qualifying was quite an interesting one. We had a bit of a changeable session.
Yeah, changeable is one word for it. So I think the only big surprise really was Russell and Yuki, more so Yuki, because Russell, it was one of those unfortunate things where bad strategy call by the team of getting out in time to get a push lap and just was out in Q1. Could have happened to anyone, really. It was just some bad luck. And I think, as we'll get into later with Mercedes, they had a better weekend than it might first appear on paper. Perez, after even more pressure on his seat, decides to go and stick it quite firmly into the wall. Alpine did what Alpine do best and reverted back to type there. And then Yuki managed to trash at an area of the track in A. I've not seen anyone really trash there before, I don't think. Definitely not in Formula One. And then in such a way that you didn't also realise was possible at that part of the track. So not necessarily a record he would have wanted this weekend, but also a little bit tongue-in-cheek considering, oh, Perez has crashed, this is my time to shine. And then you have this brilliant shot on the qualifying of his car just absolutely stuck there in a kind of mangled bit, and Ricardo just driving slowly past going, I'm having quite a good day today.
Yeah, the Russell one's interesting. It was a fueling thing that Mercedes didn't fuel his car for enough runs. So all of a sudden they were like, we're going to go out again. They go, the car's not got any petrol in it. And they go, bugger, which is somehow, at least there's sort of like a chain of command failure, a failure to plan. Whereas with Alpine, it was just a bit of stupidity. They sort of went up, a bit of a red flag for Perez while we recover his car. We should have probably figured that out. That was going to happen anyway. And then they just didn't bother send the cars out onto a drying track to set faster times. So obviously everyone else set a faster time, and Alpine came P19 and P20, or P19 and pit lane once by the time they'd changed a load of bits on Pierre Gasly's car. So the Alpine one
that really worked out for them in the long term,
Yeah, that worries me about the build quality they put together. But yeah, Alpine is being Alpine, Perez being Perez. The Russell one is a bit of an odd one, but then the Yuki crash was quite interesting. Literally happened under my nose as we're sat in the grandstands. We see him come up round the turn, and then there is a loud clatter, bits of foam fly in the air. You hear the smell of burnt rubber, and then he just skitters down the barrier to the other end. You go, oh, that's not good. And yeah, if you watch it back, you can see where essentially he's pushing hard. It's a drying track, and all he's done is run slightly wide on the exit. And where they'd put in a bed of AstroTurf, it's slightly sunk below the level of the concrete and tarmac, which means that as he got to the end of it, essentially the floor pan lip kissed the rim of the concrete and just spat the car up into a weird angle. And
I think it's safe to say that considering your positioning there on track, we can firmly blame you for this incident.
Yeah, my love and passion for Yuki Tsunoda was overwhelming as he came through the exit of that corner. And
he was too distracted by your I heart Yuki sign going, what is that poor long-haired guy doing up there? Leave me alone. Oh,
what it might have been is he would have recognized me from No, he would have recognised me from Festival of Speed a few weeks prior. So he would have gone, I know that
Oh,
guy.
yes, I forgot he's got a
Fast.
tattoo of
Yes.
your face on the inside of his arm, so he can
Yeah.
always remember you.
So, yeah, it was an interesting crash. But, yeah, great job on the team rebuilding the cars, both obviously Red Bull and RB. And then obviously both drivers being able to sort of really patch the weekend back together. But, yeah, it was an interesting crash.
I
And they
was
did
interested
actually
as well that no
resurface
one
that bit of the
else
corner.
went out at the end of Q3 to try. Like, there was enough time, I felt like, if they'd wanted to push a little bit more to try it. I was kind of surprised that there weren't a couple of the other, maybe not majority of them, but like more than Ricciardo, weren't
Yeah.
wanting to try it, because I know that he only got one place ahead, and obviously it was ahead of Yuki. But how great would they have looked as a team if he'd managed to somehow catapult his way up into like P4 or P5, and all the other drivers would have had egg on their face? It was a bit of a risk from the other teams not to, especially some of the ones lower down in the top 10, to think about just going for it, because, like you say, you don't really risk too much there. You're kind of, you know what you're doing, so why not give it a little shot?
They all tried, no, but they just couldn't put the lap times in.
Mm-mm.
It seemed
Only
like.
Ricardo came round. Everyone maybe did an outlap and then pulled back in again. Only Ricardo actually went for a fast lap, which was strange because that also meant no one got to do grid starts. But by that point, it was kind of greasy and wet, so you weren't going to get a sort of respective practice start on the grid. So, yeah, the only person that really benefited from that was Danny Ric, who sort of gave it hell for leather over one lap and thought, look, all I need to do is try and beat my teammate here. I think I've got the margin to do it. It was starting to dry just a little bit. He timed it well. But yeah, just sort of a bit of an odd one. And then we get into the Grand Prix. It's a Hungarian Grand Prix weekend. We've got McLarens dueling away. I've seen that one before somewhere. But anyway, we'll kick off with Red Bull instead and their performance across the weekend, which is equally as fascinating, Timo.
Yeah, it's between this and McLaren, you kind of wonder where to start. But we'll start with Perez, as we were talking about him anyway. He now doesn't have a top six finish in the last seven races, and Verstappen hasn't won a race since Spain, which is just an interesting thing to look at there. I wonder when the last time we had such a long streak without Verstappen winning a race, because I think we'd have to go back quite a while, probably 2020 at least.
2021, it would have been Mexico, Brazil, Qatar.
Perhaps, yes. But the team radio is again very interesting, especially on Verstappen's side, because I don't think we really heard much from Perez. We just saw him moving up slowly through the order as he was always meant to. So at least he managed to get that part right. Verstappen evolved in some respects, but again, I'm not 100% sure. It's just what time for this to all be happening. When you look at the other side of the garage, you think, oh, okay, at least with Verstappen, we've got everything in hand. And then he starts doing all of this, and we know he can make his way through the field. He proved that multiple times over the last few years, where if a qualifying session goes bad for whatever reason, he just carves his way up through the grid, and he's not able to do that as easily now as he used to be, potentially because the teams are catching up. Maybe he's grown a little complacent. Maybe he shouldn't have been up at 2 o'clock in the morning doing some sim racing. Who knows? But it just very, very interesting, and you kind of just want to sit there with your popcorn and just watch it all play out, because they're all planning on what happens if Perez leaves, but what if Max just decides, I've had enough of this, this isn't going my way? Then what do you do?
Liam Lawson, Yuki Tsunoda, top team? I don't know. It's interesting you mentioned popcorn as well. They actually had popcorn vendors at the circuit. Clearly, they were planning for a big sort of showstopper event. But I mean, we're seeing the structure, the current structure of Red Bull certainly being pushed to different limits. We've seen Red Bull pushed to its limits for championship wins before, but that was a decade ago, more in most cases. And it's interesting to see this new team being pushed in these different ways. And it's interesting to see what happens and how they're responding. And while it's good to see this uptick in performance from Checo, despite binning it in Q1, yeah, it's great on that side of things. But then Max felt like he was fighting his strategy. There were calls from him on the radio saying, you put me on this terrible, he didn't use the word terrible, strategy. And he was sort of unable to extend and extract maximum pace. Being undercut twice really put the pressure on him and the pit wall. And things just didn't seem as peachy as usual, compounded with his constant arguing with his engineer. It
Which
portrays
was
a
quite
picture of
amusing,
unease.
considering he was trying to argue at one point that Hamilton had pushed him wide at turn three, I think, and
Turn
I'm
one, and
guessing
I'm like,
just
but that's your
no,
move.
not well, no, not no, but the there was one a few laps before then, I think, or afterwards there was a lot of it, but the race engineer just went, no, you were behind him at the apex, and Verstappen just goes, whatever. It's like even he's not on your side there, and it's just, oh, it's delicious to watch because you just think Hamilton's just there driving around, minding his own business, and just reacting so calmly in comparison, and you just think, I've seen this before somewhere.
And I think the whole thing for me is, it's what part of it is Max and GP's relationship that's able to withstand that? What part of this is actually possibly a start of the breakdown? But I think it's better encapsulated by his contact with Lewis later on when that sort of thing happens. Red Bull calls it a racing incident and everyone else calls it a Max crash. And this time around, the stewards agreed with the sentiment of the rest of the field, though didn't really dish out a penalty for it. Obviously, he sort of tumbled down the order a bit. Fair enough. That's sort of natural penalty, I suppose. And it's wild that we're now on the third race weekend in a row where Max hasn't been atop the rostrum, like you said. And it's not something we likely felt we'd be seeing this year. We're getting an outcome that no one foresaw across the championship.
I mean, I'll start off with just Perez because I haven't said anything about him. But although he made it back up the field after his crash in Q1, which wasn't what he needed.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
I mean, I don't really want to praise him for making it up the field because he shouldn't have been as low as he was in the first place, and it's leaving Red Bull vulnerable. In terms of Max, he lost his cool this weekend. Whilst it's true his team did fumble a little with their strategy, he needed to keep a cool head, as it meant, you know, he took too much out of his tyres after the first stop and he couldn't get past Hamilton. And then Red Bull obviously allowed themselves to get undercut again in the second round of pit stops when they could have had the opportunity to undercut Hamilton. And then I think he was just so mad at the situation, he obviously then went for a too opportunistic dive on Hamilton, and he basically lost himself a podium position. But at the same time, he hasn't been happy with the car all weekend either. And it was very understeery. He doesn't like that. He likes the car on the nose and that will turn in when he wants it to turn in. And I think it's equally very interesting as well to see that they brought upgrades to their floor and side pods, and yet they weren't faster than McLaren and they were struggling to get past Hamilton.
It also upgrades to the rear of the car. If you look at the way the ducting comes along the side of the engine cowl, it's really changed the airflow to that rear wing. And I don't think the car's necessarily understeery. It's become more tail grippy, I think, is what they've done, is they've changed the airflow to the rear wing. They're able to activate that and the rear diffuser a lot more than they previously had been. And the result is a car that's bias has shifted rearward. It's not necessarily understeering, it's just got more rear grip than it had otherwise previously. Possibly got the same amount of front end grip, it's just actually sticking too much at the back and he's not able to really stamp on it and catch the slide. If you look at, certainly from where we're sitting at the top, as you come through the chicane at the top, you then go into a tight left-hander, you can tell the difference in Max's driving style versus everyone else, because everyone else gets to it and feeds the car into it. He gets to it and just yanks left, and the car, he expects it to turn. And he tried that a couple of times on a heavy fuel load and had to change his driving style at the start of it. And then as the fuel wore off, obviously the car came to him a bit more and he was able to get back to absolutely just getting to it, tapping the brakes and then just chucking it left. So clearly this is a car that's had some upgrades that, like you said, have shifted away from his sort of driving style. And is this the team just going, look, we just need to get a champion, the Constructors' Championship at this point. We need to get Checo up on par. We've got to make some changes to the car. Max will be able to cope with it. And more so than let's just keep building the car for Max and hope he gets the Drivers' Championship with it and we just get a Constructors that follows on. Is this suggestive of a complete shift within the team?
No.
It's the fallout of Adrian Newey, isn't it? They don't... And as well, it's... When he left, I didn't quite think he had this sort of seismic value to Red Bull that he really did. Because obviously we know Adrian Newey as, you know, the guy who can see air, but at the same time, you want to give credit to all the other aerodynamicists and engineers within the team and think it's not all just based on Adrian Newey. And yet, it kind of seems...
It is that suspicious thing that as soon as he announced he was leaving, there was like a little bit of drop-off, and it's just steadily increased in one way or another since then, either through bad luck or just bad performance or just things going wrong. And you're thinking, like you say, can't be just because he's left. Like, the others must know what they're doing. They didn't just get there. They're not just extras that have been flung in just to make it look like they've got a big team. But at the same time, what is going on? Because I think we'd all rather like to know.
I'd also like to speculate that as much as some of this is the inverse of the Adrian Newey effect, maybe we're at the final aftershocks of the cost cap breaches and the penalties of that, because some of that came in the form of a cost cap, their cost caps being sort of tightened again, and also a reduction in development and wind tunnel time. That is likely going
to
hit
the last time they order extra KFC.
But that's the last time, that's going to impact the way that your sort of upgrades come. And we're now seeing Red Bull bringing upgrades that are upsetting the balance of the car, that are upsetting their drivers and aren't moving them ahead of the field or keeping them the distance they already were ahead of the field. So potentially this is what their punishment was supposed to be, was unfortunately for them, it's just come a year they weren't anticipating it to. And all of a sudden, they're left in the middle of a shitstorm. They've run out of computer development time. They've run out of wind tunnel time. And they've lost the guy that can do that with a piece of paper and a pencil. So all of a sudden, Red Bull are going, oh, bugger, we've lost all of the tools to do this. We've put the upgrades onto the car and it's not worked. What now?
One thing that will make them feel better, though, I think, and they should take solace in, is that I think, I'm not sure since when, but definitely over the last few rounds, Stake have brought around 9 upgrades to their car.
Have they?
Yeah.
Apparently, yeah. And wow. So, you know, it could be worse.
That's not made a damn bit of difference. So that's impressive.
If anything, it's made them worse, yes.
Yeah.
Quite impressive.
Speaking of falling backwards, with a bit of pinch of salt, Ferrari, who have now lost second place in the Constructors' Championship to McLaren, but they didn't really have a bad weekend, did the Scuderia?
I actually thought they had a good weekend for where they are with things, if that makes sense.
Just big asterisks attached to it.
Yeah. I mean, no, they're not currently fighting Red Bull and McLaren at the top, but both drivers were on form and had a smooth run of things for what feels like the first time since Monaco, really. And it did amuse me when Martin Brundle said the only person in the top five or sort of thereabouts that was happy with their strategy was Leclerc. And he was right. Ferrari gave Leclerc a really good strategy. They kept him out for longer on the first stint, which meant he could push sort of hard in the second. And that gave him the opportunity to get closer to Hamilton and Verstappen. And then they pitted him a second time in sort of the standard pit window and got the undercut on Verstappen. Did they have the pace to fight for a podium? No. But was it a clean weekend? Yes. And they were in a good position that should anything happen, a bit like Austria, they could pick up more points and perhaps have gotten a podium that way too. And in some ways, they did kind of pick up more points when Max fumbled.
Yeeted himself into Lewis Hamilton again.
Yeah, the P4 Ferrari with Leclerc meant that he scored as many points in that single Grand Prix as he had in the previous four races combined, which was quite interesting. But at the same time, I've got to agree that it's one of those where they did the best they could with what they were given and just didn't fumble it. A little bit like Mahindra and Nyck de Vries in particular on the Saturday race in Formula E, you're just kind of like, just stay out of trouble, I'm going to mind my own business, and bam, P4, and just kind of stay here and just try and make sure no one notices that I'm actually here. And like you say, with Max and Lewis having their latest saga, you just kind of, I'm just going to sneak on by here. You two just you take care of each other. I'm just going to do my thing. But essentially, they just had a nice quiet race, the pair of them, and then swapped around places from where they started. So again, kind of damage limitation.
Yeah, I mean, my notes aren't really too different to the rest of you. I mean, better, the pace has come back and Charles is back on form. Carlos still doing just as well as Carlos ever does, which is to say incredibly consistent. They outscored Red Bull this weekend as well. And looking like a competitor on race pace with them if not one lap pace, which is arguably better. So they're able to sort of fight it a bit more in the race than they are in qualifying, which is a slightly more sort of productive way to go about things, I think. And hopefully,
I think we've always said that we prefer to do better in the race than we would in qualifying, because whilst you might give yourself more work to do in the race, at least you can climb up there instead of just being stuck behind all the time.
And equally, I'm hoping that the summer break, which edges nearer by the weekend, won't interrupt their form. So fingers crossed, this is the start of a good thing for Ferrari. And while there's a bit of a summer shutdown, they've got some positive notes to take away and compare against their recent form as well. So it's a good stepping stone for them. And I think a good stepping stone is the same phrase you could really use for Mercedes, though it doesn't look like that on the face of things.
No, I mean, again, with Russell's qualifying debacle, it obviously made things look a little more tricky than they needed them to be. But he managed to come up through the field as well. You know, he wasn't stuck behind there. He kind of didn't necessarily follow Perez, but they both just did what they needed to do there. And with Russell, you're not as surprised by it, because it is George Russell. He's not had these kind of seismic errors as Perez has been having lately. But yeah, lots of positives for him. He kind of did what he needed to do, damage limitation for him as well. And then Hamilton qualified solidly, managed to move up. He got his 200th podium by the end, 12th podium in Hungary. And it seemed like a little bit of Hamilton of old. I mean, I don't think he ever left as such, but he's definitely back, if that kind of makes sense. And how calmly he battled Verstappen. I mean, the difference in team radio when Verstappen did yeet himself down on the inside and then went for a bit of a ride was quite amusing. It's like the contrast was just great. Just didn't let it get to him. And then even in the cool down room, he's just so diplomatic. He's trying to give McLaren a compliment because he's happy that they're there, because it's his old team. And he likes having that fight, because he doesn't necessarily just want to, as much as he enjoyed winning all those Grand Prix, I'm sure he would have got more satisfaction out of it from having to fight a bit more often. And Norris seemed to just decide to take his frustration out of it on him and saying, well, yeah, you had your fast car 7 years ago, now it's our turn. Hamilton goes, were you even here 7 years ago? And it's like, it's just the smooth way of just going about that. And it was just quite amusing. And yeah, it's just like, Lewis is back.
I mean, yeah, Lewis can be in that situation quite cool-headed. Whilst I think if I was in Lando's situation, I'd be fuming. But anyway,
it was unfortunate, because you think whoever would have been in Lewis's place there would have probably been who Lando would try biting set off. But it was just unfortunate that it was Lewis, and he wasn't going to rise to it. He's not going to go, you what? No, it's not his way.
But yeah, I did think Mercedes were going to have better pace than that, to be fair. But I think, like you said, Hamilton did the best he could, and the team obviously gave him a good strategy to get the undercut on Max, and they had enough pace so that it wasn't easy for Max to get past him. It's a shame that the team underfueled Russell in qualifying, because it would have been nice to see how things played out with two Mercedes drivers up there, especially with Max sort of bringing that spice. Because I saw a TikTok that was like, Max wouldn't try half of the things that he does on other drivers with Leclerc, because Leclerc would kill them both. And I think Russell is quite like that too. He doesn't give sort of Max that extra space. It could have probably turned out.
He knows he's fighting Max, and he's not going to give him the slimmest of opportunities to try and get past, which is something only really Leclerc and Hamilton also have learned, because no one else has been able to fight him properly, successfully anyway. And yeah, like you say, it's just interesting how, like, I can get away with this with some people, and then he kind of maybe forgot it was Lewis in the car and just went, oh, I can do that. Oh, no, I can't do this. That was a bad idea.
There's certainly a interesting thing on the way that Max fights different people. And like you said, with Lewis, he fights it differently. He certainly does it with Charles as well, because he seems to know that Charles has a very sort of on-track nihilistic approach to it of, if I absolutely send one on Charles will just simply not move and we'll both be clattering towards the barriers at a trillion miles an hour. And he sort of does do that differently with Lewis. And it's weird that he didn't do that this time round. Sort of like Red Mist had descended and...
Maybe he's just forgotten what it's like to fight Lewis, because he's not had to do it in such a long time, really, consistently. He kind of does it occasionally. Oh, Lewis hasn't had the fastest car, so he's not been able to put him in a fight. And now Lewis is kind of there, and he's got a spring in his step. And it was like, no, we're gonna do this again.
To a certain extent, but equally at the end of the day, it wasn't really fighting. It was just Lewis approaching a right-hand turn, and Max steaming through a locked-up tyres.
And Hamilton's just not going to engage. No,
Hamilton just cruising along goes, oh, right-hand bend, better start turning right. And all of a sudden, Max Verstappen just locked-up tyres, and going, gee, yeah. Oh, well, keep going. And you just sort of know that Lewis is like, all right then, and just sort of kept plugging on. But I mean, yeah, just great weekend really for Mercedes all in, and it's nice to see them marching back up the order. Real competence from them as a team, bar the fueling issue, and it's now really being backed up by the pace as well. So clearly the structure in the team and the actual sort of dynamics of the people involved in it are still there and working nicely, and it's starting to show through in their results, which I quite like. Let down a bit by the fueling debacle with Russell in Q1. I think, like we've already mentioned, it would have been great to have seen him a bit further up there, but otherwise not too shabby. Which after Mercedes brings us to McLaren, and this is where I think the discussion is going to be interesting. So I'd like to open this one up and say, for Lando, I think the biggest problem from his weekend is that he's now had 5 poles in the sport, has never actually led lap one of a Grand Prix, sometimes barely coming out of
that
turn
does
one
amuse
in the
me,
lead.
Regardless of whatever else happened this weekend.
Yeah, and in
he has also gained the lead on when he hasn't had pole as well. So there has been like other times where he
there
has.
Have been
it's
other
a weird
times
Leclerc
where he's
kind of thing.
Yeah.
If he can't win from his own pole, but Verstappen can, he's kind of trying to make his own version of that.
Yeah, sort of inverting it a bit. But surely when you've got the... Leclerc fails to convert poles to wins. Leclerc at least leads lap one of a Grand Prix. Lando,
oh, yeah,
it's
kind of like,
seen...
I can do one better than that. No, that's not a dare, Lando. No.
This one, though, wasn't quite Lando's fault. He had an issue when shifting into second gear, which was more mechanical than on him.
Yes, yeah, there
but
are
just still amusing that it's a statistic that continues.
It's a statistic that continues, and I've got some more sort of points from his sort of career thus far, certainly when it comes to sort of Oscar, and adding the fact that Oscar has been sacrificed for Lando before for his benefit and never complained once. Silverstone 2023, he was told to hold position behind Lando. Japan 23, told to let Lando pass. Mexico 23, told to let Lando pass. Australia 2024, told to let Lando pass and lost a podium position at his home race. Canada 2024, told to hold position behind.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lando after 2 pit stops. So Oscar has done this before, but the moment that it's swapped, Lando seems to get incredibly tetchy about it, and it comes across as quite arrogant and self-centered. At the same time, with Max tumbling down the order, this was a prime chance for Lando to close the gap to him in the standing, so I do understand him trying to maximize the points haul and close up that difference to Max. McLaren would have come home with the same points, and Piastri owed one even more so than before. It's very much a double-edged sword, and it cannot have been easy to call. Ultimately, though, across the race, Oscar had the upper hand, and his lead never really came under threat. If you look at the way he opened it up through the first stint, Oscar just fucked off down the road.
He did also lose it himself.
He did lose a bit of the distance himself with a few wobbles and a bad outlap, but he still had an overall lead. The fact is, and then sort of, McLaren haven't really adjusted how they make their strategy since becoming a top-running team again. It's showing a little when we get to moments like this. We saw it in Silverstone, where they didn't think to double stack because ultimately it would have sacrificed a few seconds off one of their drivers, but that was better than arguably sacrificing an entire lap. In Silverstone, Lando was about to lap or come back and overtake Oscar in the course of one lap post-pit stop. So there's this shift that needs to happen inside McLaren as well to change things like this happen. Covering off the drivers behind, sure, but you need to appropriately prioritise your drivers to avoid this happening. And regardless, they've now jumped Ferrari in the standings. They're just 51 points shy of Red Bull. And at the moment, they're outscoring the Milton Keynes outfit by 10.5 points each weekend. So coming out of Singapore on this trajectory, McLaren could have the lead in the constructors. It's all a bit of a jumble. And it's great seeing them fighting this back through as a team. But at the same time, if you're Piastri, is this how you want your maiden win to come? If you're Lando, you really wanted those points because you're chasing down Max in the driver's title. If you're McLaren, you sort of don't really give a shit either way. You've got all the points you really wanted. And given the way they seem to be treating drivers in a multitude of sports, certainly IndyCar, they don't really seem to care 2 hoots at all. So it's a complete mixture of points.
The 1-2 for them was all but guaranteed. They just had to not mess it up. And they were lucky that they didn't in that way, because that would have been even worse for them. And Piastri's never really complained before about when he's had to let Lando by, sure. And he didn't this time either, and complained that it wasn't happening soon enough. He was just kind of curious as to what was going on. We don't know quite how much he was hearing on the radio. We just hear a lot of back and forth from Lando and his team radio. But at the same time, he also made the mistake that allowed Norris to get past him, possible in the first place. Sure, he led from the start, pretty much, and went off and did the rest of it. But he lost it himself. Yeah, he didn't get overtaken as such, but he allowed, created the opportunity for Norris and the other side of garage to get past him. And they were told that they were allowed to race before then, and Piastri wasn't able to catch up with them after this. And in terms of the championship, Piastri isn't really in contention. Norris has the better chance, and now that we're over the halfway mark of the season, Norris should be prioritised really for that because he does have the best chance. I still don't think it's going to happen, but mathematically and all the rest of it, car capable driver and everything else, he's the best shot that we've got at the moment out of everyone who isn't Max Verstappen. I think he shouldn't have given up the win because amusingly it would have been a much better win for him than Miami because he would have actually seen off all of his competition like on track with good strategy, just keeping his head down and doing a good job. He'd have beaten everyone fair and square. It would have sucked for Oscar, but that's motorsport, and he would have learned from it because it was his stake going wide that created the whole opportunity in the first place. And like you say, Oscar's not going to want to necessarily win a Grand Prix, his first one at that, in such a manner. And obviously he's not going to say no to it if the team gives him the opportunity, because you're not going to start messing about and then Lewis just goes, all right, I'll take that one for myself. I'll have two in a row, thank you very much. But McLaren as a team, they made it far more difficult for themselves than they needed to, and they created friction within the team itself as a result. And it's proof that they've got the potential of doing a lot of great things, but they're not capable of it yet. And Piastri also just doesn't need any help to win. He's a future champion, and he would have just learned from this whole situation. So instead, you've just got this really awkward situation, a little bit like me finding out the result, watching the last 15 laps, wondering what the hell is going on because I hadn't caught into the race up to that point. Then, whilst waiting around for the podium to start at Formula E, turning around just to have a little look around to see who's about, to find Mark Webber standing behind me and going, oh, I would love a penny for his thoughts right now because that would be quite fascinating. But I'll leave him alone because he's looking after Mitch Evans' mum.
Mark Webber, famously a man that gets on well with the idea of team orders and swapping drivers.
Well, again, if you've watched or heard any of the Channel 4 commentary, Coulthard was just so triggered because it was 1999 with him and Hakkinen all over again. Like Shakespeare's like, I'm so sorry to keep bringing this up, but we've got a perfect opportunity to get the insight, and just, everyone's finding it so fascinating. Mike Brundle's going, this is just astounding because you're not achieving anything. You've got the 1-2. It doesn't matter which way around it is. This isn't a 2021 situation where you've not been in this position for so long that you just want to play it safe, and you don't want to risk going together or anything. You've got this, and I don't get why you've got to do it like this, Ellie May.
For me, it's the conduct of it all. And I've just calmed down about it. And it's probably a good thing that we're doing this podcast on a Tuesday instead of our usual Monday slot, because I don't think a team has ever made me so angry. And even if I have calmed, I still can't quite put into words how I truly feel about this situation. And for me, it's tarnished their 1-2 and it's tarnished Piastri's first win. And neither driver are at fault here. This is on McLaren. They put Lando in a horrible situation. They put Piastri in a horrible situation. They put themselves in a horrible situation by pitting Lando first and giving him the undercut on his teammate. But it's the way they conducted themselves and the way that they spoke to Lando when asking to give that position back, when he had done nothing wrong. It was toxic and it was manipulative, and I don't condone that behaviour in the slightest. It's unacceptable what they were saying to him and twisting it to make it sound like it was his fault when it was McLaren's screw-up. They called him childish for pulling a gap between him and Piastri. What's childish about it? Racing, going fast like you're meant to. They also said, well, no, you'll do the right thing. What? Saving your ass because you fumbled it?
Can I just point out, you said you'd calm down about this.
It's like me with Ocon Gasly.
Everyone Except gets she's moment. Right.
Everyone gets their moment to be a little bit irate on this podcast, and this is Ellie Mays.
Oh, God knows who mine's going to be for. I'm going to defend Sergeant if the cows come home probably for something, aren't I?
Ah, no, you're going to go left field. You're going to pick like a Scotty
Mac. Is that not left field enough?
No, you're going to go Scotty Mac in IndyCar or something. There's going to be something that happens in a few races time there.
just
continue anyway. Sorry, I interrupted your.
No,
you got on a bit of a roll.
That was basically it. I hate how they've.
I think it's just the fact that they achieved nothing by doing this because they would have got the same result for the team anyway, and they just created friction unnecessarily. And you just go, so what did we? It's kind of like have you both seen, and anyone listening, spoilers here, the end of Burn After Reading?
No.
No, basically they've gone through this entire curious film, and one character says to the other, "What did we learn here with all of this?" And like, not a fucking clue, but just not to do that again.
I think that's
just felt a bit like
thing.
That.
Yeah, McLaren have come away from it with sort of essentially no punishment, no reprimand for doing that sort of thing, and they'll just sort of go, okay, cool, that works. We know we can just absolutely fuck with our drivers to try and sort of manufacture situations. And you're sort of looking at it going, no, I want to see them race for the finish. And yeah, I'm still torn about it. As much as I wanted Piastri's first win, I didn't want it like that. As much as I want Lando to be fighting for the title against Max, I don't want it to be sort of completely handed to him. And as much as I want McLaren to storm through and really start challenging Red Bull for the constructors, that wasn't really sort of a threat with this one. So that's sort of a null point. But there's so many different aspects from this that have all left me with a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. And I'm like, oh, I wanted to enjoy this more than I had. Thank you, McLaren. You've done a great job.
Well, you could even
with that.
Tell on the podium that no one, like Lewis, was the only happy person there. And it's like, oh, P3, we're really coming back on this, bouncing back here. And you just look at P1 and P2 and think, I've seen this in Malaysia many moons ago.
I mean, you look at Lando's sort of reaction. He walks straight past Piastri to just go and soak Hamilton and the race engineer with the champagne. Like, he completely blanks his teammate, essentially a carry-on still from the cool-down room. You're sort of going, oh, come on, I know it's not the situation you wanted, but at least don't act like a petulant child about it in this form. Because ultimately, I appreciate this wasn't a situation of Lando's creation, but I would like to.
Well,
think
are you saying that
better?
in his situation, you wouldn't have tried doing the same thing of like, well, I couldn't get a second Grand Prix win here. Why should I be having to help my teammate get his first when he's more than capable of doing it himself?
I'm just saying that I would have tried to not look like a dick in public about it.
I don't think he did, to be honest. I think he was understandably miffed off about it. And,
I get understandably.
Okay,
I
think other drivers have probably. I think it makes you appreciate how calmly Lewis reacted in Abu Dhabi in 2021, and how that's like the top tier way to react to something that is very unfair. But at the same time, none of the other drivers are like him in that sense. They don't have what he's had. So I think they're all still learning it that way. And it's just, yeah, hopefully, I just hope that McLaren learn from it moving forward.
But at the same time, Hamilton is also, is he 40? Oh, he's near enough.
He's
nearly,
isn't he? Yeah.
So he's had that sort of life experience, and you know, what Lando's a
year.
Oh
yeah, but you think if there was any ever a time to be justifiably hacked off about a situation, that would have been it. And this is not anywhere near as bad, but it's understandable why someone with nowhere near the life experience nor the rest of it would maybe just have a bit of sour grapes, and justifiably so.
Yeah, I think it's for sure justifiable. I would be livid. I'd be like, do not even. No, I wouldn't be livid at Piastri because it's not Piastri's fault, but I would be livid at my team. I wouldn't want to speak to them. I'd be like, don't talk to me.
Luckily, for everyone else on the grid that we're about to talk about, we can probably fit them in less time than we've talked about McLaren, so we can help balance things out slightly.
I was going to say, if we want to shovel this into an hour, we've got 15 minutes. Aston Martin, point for Stroll, average race for them. Bit of inter-team fighting on the radio, though, but still clinging on up there.
Well, yeah, funnily enough, this was another round of team orders, because Alonso let Stroll pass so Stroll could have a stab at Tsunoda, and then didn't give the place back when he couldn't get past Tsunoda. In this instance, you should let your teammate back because you haven't really achieved anything.
Yeah. However, there is more of an interesting goof for Aston Martin this weekend, which was their qualifying, because they were mistakenly put into Parc Fermé with the Apex GP cars, the Brad Pitt film cars, which were floating in Parc Fermé. And essentially, I think it was after one of the red flags, they were shuffled into there, possibly after, I can't remember quite what happened, but essentially they were put in the wrong place, weren't allowed out. And they were like, what? Hang on. Oh, hang on. We've missed the slot to go out. pants. And that was a bit strange. And I think at this point, are we drawing a line between safety and the rules of the sports? Parc Fermé is a proper sacred area of the paddock. Like, you only go in there if you are properly certified to go in there. And we've got like movie props floating around in there, and it's also now
they're
confusing
a real
students.
Formula One team, Jesse. I don't know what you're on about. I saw Brad Pitt getting past Max Verstappen when he went to turn one. I don't know where you were at that point.
Didn't he get a podium as well?
He got very close. We thought he was on for one for a bit.
Was it like P4, P5 for them this weekend?
I don't know about the teammate, but Brad Pitt was definitely on this. Not bad for an older
yeah,
gem.
Not bad for a guy who used to drive in the 90s. But yeah, just a bit of a weird one that they got goofed into that one, and makes me concerned for
some. We really
should
start including them in the team-by-team analysis.
We ought to, actually. They do post results across the weekend, so we could start weaving them in. Perhaps we'll do that for Spa or something.
Next time we have a quiet race.
Yeah, next time we have a quiet race, so that'd be like, maybe Azerbaijan Zandvoort. Or something. Yeah, Zandvoort maybe. We'll weave in an Apex GP. But yeah, weird one that they somehow caused a bit of a trip up for Aston Martin. Minardi, RB, Toro Rosso. Actually an interesting weekend for them. And I mean, we've already mentioned Yuki's crash, which was huge, and he was properly distraught after that as well. There was, you could see him sort of head in hands against the barrier, absolutely pissed off with himself over that one. They reprofiled that section overnight to take away the lip that cannonballed him through the air. Interestingly, that crash registered a higher g-force than the one of Romain Grosjean's in Bahrain, so this was a huge shunt, really. And I think he was notably limping, actually. If you go back and look at his onboard at the end of the race, as he gets out of his car, he's sort of got a bit of a weird waddle where he's clearly bruised his sort of coccyx in the landing of that one. But yeah, I think decent weekend for Yuki, especially doing a one-stopper with old engine parts thrown onto your car. Pretty good. Would have been interesting to see what he could have done with a decently built car and a good strategy. Speaking of strategy, though, Danny Ric really got shafted with his.
Yeah, it was a bit unfortunate for him because, like you say, he started ahead of him, should have really finished ahead of him in a lot of ways. But yeah, they just bungled the shot. It's really odd because he had quite a quiet weekend all weekend, and at least was the only driver throughout the entire weekend from that set of four that managed to bring a car home in one piece and didn't get into any trouble. And maybe that's what Red Bull are looking for. Just, you know what? We just don't want any drama. Just bring home a few points here and there at this.
Help DEA keep our communities safe and healthy by participating in National Prescription Drug Take Back Day, Saturday, October 25th. Take action right in your own home by cleaning out your medicine cabinet of unneeded medications. Keep them safe, clean them out, take them back. Find a collection site near you at DEATakeBack.com. Do your part to lower overdose deaths and prevent prescription drug misuse before it starts. That's DEATakeBack.com.
Wait, just enough for it to get the constructors. Just don't risk it or anything, and maybe that's going to help him. But a shame we couldn't see him further up. And yeah, just very good strategy. Just pulling him in at the wrong time to let him out in traffic and kind of awkward traffic where you can maybe get past, but it's not beneficial to at that point of the race from a strategic point of view, and just seemed very odd. They got the fastest pit stop of Ricciardo for the weekend, though, out of everyone. So that was kind of a weird thing as well. It's kind of like you're nailing some bits of it and you're really screwing up on others. You mentioned, what was it? You say Yuki had a really good pit stop, or was I?
One stop strategy.
Yeah, you're saying that was impressive. I was just putting one IndyCar reference in because during the Toronto race, Graham Rahal came in at one point. They did an entire kind of tire and fuel change and his steering wheel in under 15 seconds, and it went off and off he went and got a top 10 finish. And that is quite a beautiful thing to see in IndyCar, because you don't see anything anywhere near that quick usually, especially when the steering wheel is literally jammed out and on, and it just went immediately, and you just think, you gotta love the technology.
I do love a really good, well-timed pit stop.
It was a 68G impact for Tsunoda. But yeah, Ricciardo was, like you said, weirdly the only one to come up this weekend with no form of crash out of all the Red Bull RB drivers. I mean,
do you think he was just driving around thinking, please no, I just want to drive in one piece. No one drove into me. Droll, get away.
Oh, well, we've already had that. But yeah, I mean, sort of agreeing with your guys' sentiments, he had a terrible strategy. I mean, they pitted him at the same time as those who started the race on softs, yet he was on mediums, which caused just struggle and no advantage really, as he was then, you know, like you said, put in a lot of traffic, and then they pitted him again so early that it did give him a few positions, but
he was kind of short-term gain for long-term pain.
Yeah, he couldn't gain much more from that. But on the other side of it, they did a really good strategy with Yuki, and they were really able to maximize a one-stop strategy with him, as he looked after his medium tires really well in that first stint. So there are positives, and if they had done a better strategy with Ricardo as well, I think both of them could have been in the points. They had good pace this weekend.
It's moving forward to them, which we like to see. Williams, a bit of a stagnant weekend for them, really. Cars looked good, and Albon's early stint had him scrapping away in the midpoint section, actually. It was really quite spicy, sort of dueling away with Alonso for a fair bit. It's just a shame that it didn't bring home any points. Better weekend for Logan, too, with some properly quick moments, and I think the second quickest lap of the race as well, which is quite a weird one. But yeah, hopefully they can start bringing
this all together. Seems like such a Williams/Logan Sargeant statistic. It is your second quickest lap of the Grand Prix.
Yeah, Grosjean had that a couple of years back when he was with Haas in Spain. There was Lewis Hamilton got, I think it was 2020, he got the second fastest lap at the Spanish Grand Prix, and you're all going, okay, weird.
The Williams are another team that kind of need to get on top of their strategies. And Albon kind of voiced this over the radio. He was, I think, saving his tyres when then they switched the strategy at a too later point in time, meaning he could have actually pushed his tyres a little harder. And it's instances like this that costs them then sort of a potential points finish.
It's all the little things that are just starting to sort of build up to be one slightly too big issue for them. And if they can start to peel away at them and get them sorted, it'll be a lot better. Speaking of trying to find the reasons as to why they're slow, stake.
I mean, they don't understand their car at all. And it's, I basically, touching upon what sort of team I said earlier, that they've been playing around so much with their upgrades and nothing seems to be working for them at the minute. And considering this race marks the start of the second half of the season, that's pretty poor.
Yeah.
Especially in an era where qualifying is as close as it is, the racing is getting there slowly now. I mean, like you say, we've seen Haas and Alpine get up, though we've had Williams get close and in the points on a few occasions. Kind of the opportunities have come for all the other teams to maximise these opportunities. And when you have drivers like Russell and Perez out of position having to fight their way back up, yeah, you maybe don't beat them, but you'd expect them to still finish a bit higher up than they did. And for them to still just kind of be exactly where they've been since the start of the season, you just think, is this the perfect time to insert the Bottas traditions meme?
What would be interesting is to see how well Apex F1 team are doing compared to Stake at this time of the season.
That is a very interesting question. I think they're arguably doing better. I think Apex have put themselves somewhere around about RB, possibly Aston Martin. They're sort of consistently sort of in the point scoring positions. Let's see. Apex GP F1. Is this the right one? There we go. Hungary, they came P7 and P6. When you look at their results, they had, we forgot to mention, Paul Aron did their FP1 test session for them at Hungary as well, which was quite interesting. Which I like the attention to detail. Well. Yeah. They came P5 and P6 in Britain as well. And then if we get to, bad one for them in Austria, Sunny DNF, Joshua P7. So I think, yeah, generally speaking, we're looking at Apex probably somewhere a long way ahead of Stake at this point in time. Maybe they might even be beating the next team on our list, which is Haas. And tricky circuit for them, mediocre pace, but nothing abhorrently terrible moving on, I think, for them.
It's nice to say that it was a bit of a bogey track because they've been doing so well generally this season that it's kind of, we're not too worried about it. So we don't have to say too much because P13-15 is still not terrible in terms of getting close to points. And you're weirdly, not overly confident, but somewhat assured that they'll be back.
Yeah, I think it's perhaps seems more disappointing than it is because of how well they've done in recent races, but Hass are going to be pretty much a team where some tracks are good for them, some are not. I don't think they currently have a car to be consistently up there every race weekend, and it just happened to be that Hungary was one of them.
Yeah, I think that they've sort of just got a few circuits that just aren't going to be favorable to that car. And I think the tight and slow nature of it does not favor the Haas. It needs a circuit where it can be up to speed and flowing a bit more and sort of a bit more consistent, sort of loading its suspension tires. But we'll see how it moves on. Alpine, however, fucked themselves over in qualifying by not going out in Q1. We've already mentioned that. Ocon had pace and climbed quickly in the opening stint, actually. He made a fantastic series of moves through the opening corners before pitting way too early from the new mediums at around the time the soft runners did. So I have no clue what he was doing there or what the team was asking from him. And then he did a fourth stop at the end for softs after a double hard stint. Really shows they don't understand their car or they just panicked. So, eh? Meanwhile, Gasly's rebuilt car having a hydraulic failure is a little bit suspect. And I don't want to besmirch their build quality and processes, but boy, it does not look good when a freshly built car immediately hydraulically fails. They are reportedly closing in on a deal, though, with Mercedes for a technical partnership, possibly starting as soon as next year, though 2026 is the more widely understood start date for the partnership, which would include engines, gearboxes, and suspension.
I'm just going to go and say that they were never really going to do good here anyway, so it's not that much of a loss, really. It's kind of a return to form.
I just put it was bad, it was messy, strange strategies, poor reliability.
It's all
Very
typical
unfortunate time for
RB
me to
weekend.
also then check after the weekend to see who I've had in my fantasy team because I forgot and forgot to once again to get Gasly out of the team and go, yes. I
Well,
take comfort from the fact that at least one of you two did much worse than me. So, yeah.
I haven't even had a chance to check yet, so it's possibly me.
Spoilers, it's you.
Yay!
Annoyed me with my wild prediction because if it wasn't for Gasly DNFing.
It annoyed me
Yep.
for my podium prediction as well, because I had him pegged as coming third, so yeah.
Yeah, again, you were smoking something when you were making those predictions,
I
but
got my
you
Piastri
did.
win though, didn't I?
Yeah, but you should have been happy with that and not try to get a Gasly P3.
Hook or by crook, I got my Piastri win. Anyway, speaking of wins, we'll go into our winners and spinners. Timo, we'll start with your winner, please.
Mercedes, pretty much just for what we talked about earlier, there's not much to add there. I think a little bit like oh, who was it we were just talking about? Haas, I think it's kind of weirdly not as bad weekend as it looks for them. It's just circumstances happen. It could have happened to any team. It would have been fun to see what Russell could have done with if he was up there and how they could have tag teamed a bit because I think they've been able to carve through the field a little bit more and maybe do what they were hoping to do in Silverstone perhaps and carve their way through the field and get challenged McLaren a bit more. But they're on the right track, so I'm looking forward to see what they can do in Spa.
I mean, it was great seeing Nico Rosberg in the paddock talking to
Well, he put
Andreas
Lando Norris,
Seidel
he took a
about.
selfie in front of his car before the race saying he's going to win. So we all know who's actually to blame there.
Yeah, but also him talking to Andreas Seidel about. Not Andreas Seidel, Andreas Stella? Was it Andreas Stella? Yeah, about how to manage sort of two very closely matched drivers and sort of inter-team battles. And he's like, trust me, I've lived through this one. I know how this goes. And I was like, oh,
Have you
yeah.
heard about Spain 2016? Yes, Nico. Yes, we've heard about Spain
Yeah, we've heard
2016.
about 2016, the year when you beat Lewis Hamilton in equal machinery. Ellie May, your winner.
I've gone for Ferrari because I think it was very much a damage limitation weekend for them in the sense that they did the best they could with what they have, and it was just sort of clean and quiet, and all the other teams around them somehow fumbled, so they're not really, they can't be winners.
Yeah, this is true. They sort of by proxy
Win by
winners.
default.
Yeah, best way to win by default or by being handed it by your teammate in team orders. Anyway, my winner
Yeah,
is
push you onto
weirdly,
your winner.
yeah,
Yeah.
weirdly, my winner is someone who I also wanted to put as a spinner. I sort of wanted to have them in both categories, but I wanted to go one way or t'other. So I went McLaren as my winner. And I think the pace is right there. You could see it this weekend that they have got a quick car. Unfortunately, they have not got the quickest set of drivers, or certainly one that's prone to occasionally bottling it. I'm still torn over the result and how it was achieved. I think we've discussed that to certainly a point of awareness now, though I am happy to see them taking the fight to Red Bull. So for me, championship wise, it's great to see McLaren doing what they're doing performance wise. There's a lot of rough edges that still need to be sorted out, though. So it's a winner with caveats.
It reminds me a bit of Ferrari and Aston Martin as well, in terms of when they've been on the rise and getting good results, but then it's not been able to be converted into anything long-term. Whereas, regardless of the problems that Mercedes and Red Bull have had over the years, when they have had them, they've at least had all the stuff in the background sorted, so it's literally just the car, or it's literally just one problem that is the issue. It's not a bit of everything. It's where you look at Mercedes this year and last year, the car has definitely been the main issue, but everything else has been pretty rock solid, so they've just been able to keep on with that, and it's not been too much of a concern, so all the focus is there. Whereas McLaren, like you said earlier, they just need to figure out how to convert that potential into actual capability.
I mean, McLaren at the moment are in a bit of a weird way, reminding me of, say, sort of like Ferrari in 2017. They're sort of able to get up there and challenge in the same way that Seb was able to get up and challenge Lewis for titles, but there were just too many weird hurdles cropping up.
It's kind of, you get up there and then you kind of, ooh, I'm here. Shit, what do I do?
Yeah.
They keep creating the hurdles for themselves.
Yes,
the hurdles are not there.
Yeah, they're supposed to be running a 100-meter sprint, but for some reason they're running ahead of themselves and putting down the hurdles as they go. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Just run forwards and stop doing that, please. They're essentially making themselves spinners, which is something that you two agree on.
Yeah, I mean, before AMA goes off on what is promising to be maybe another bit of a run, it's a thing where it's weird to be having the team as a spinner, but not the drivers. And it just kind of shows how messy the whole situation is. But we've talked about it as McLaren.
Yeah, and I obviously agree. I mean, it's more down to the behaviour and how they conducted themselves. I just think it's toxic and manipulative. And I just don't condone it at all. And it shouldn't be happening.
It's a 1-2, but at what cost?
I mean, we spoke, was it after the Austrian Grand Prix, the British Grand Prix, where I sort of mentioned I was concerned about Lando's sort of mental health and the amount he beats himself up when there's sort of a failing or he doesn't quite get that win. And now we've got the team acting like that on top of it. It does still level a bit of a concern with me. And I want to keep an eye on it because I think it's worth mentioning. Because if that's the state the team's going through and that's the state we've seen his mental health at, I don't want it to spiral.
And this is the team that are supposedly in partnership with Mind, the mental health charity, and this is how they're treating their drivers.
Maybe it's all an elaborate marketing scheme.
What sort of... I won't go
look,
into that.
Look at what this kind of bad situation does. We can help.
I was going to try and make an Iran-Contra joke about mental health, but I really couldn't string it together. But I know exactly what you mean.
They're highlighting gaslighting and how you should take a stand to it.
Yeah, this is what you shouldn't be doing, or this is what you should be looking out for. Don't do this. Do as we say, not as we do. My spinner, though, Red Bull. They've come away from the weekend looking as though they're on the back foot now. While Perez has found pace, the car isn't keeping up with the field, and Max's communication, on the face of it, seems to be breaking down. It's fun to see after any period of dominance, but at the same time, I do like to see functioning professionalism in my teams, in my high-flying sports. And this
Sorry, which team do you support again?
Ferrari, but they're Italians, they're given a bye. It's just... I don't know. It's strange.
They've forgotten how to not win.
Yeah, which is weird. It's also taken them 3 races to get really good at not winning, which is strange. Anyway, speaking of not winning, it's our predictions. And none of us got pole position correct. I got 1 point for my Piastri win. Ellie May got 1 point for predicting Hamilton P3. No one got their fastest lap and no one got their wild predictions. So Timo, that means we're already into the weird realm of your fastest lap of Piastri rumbling on. So,
oh no, don't worry. I don't have to stick with this one. I can change now. I'm free forever.
Oh, after the science thing taking nearly a year, you've decided...
Oh yeah, dear Lord, no, I'm not risking that again. It's... No, I never did that before Sainz. I just did that for Sainz and I thought, you know what? It won't be that long. Oops.
No, you had done it before Sainz. You were working your way through the grid.
Yeah. Oh, I was working my way through the grid, but I think
Yeah, I was prepared to not. I was prepared to wait a lot less time for all of that, and now I've had a good year and a half to think about it. So I'm going to maybe I'll choose Pietro next time. Maybe I'll choose someone else.
He's mastered the art of patience. Now he's on to a new task.
Mm-hmm. It's like Red Bull. We've mastered winning, so now losing.
Fair enough. Speaking further of winning, and more importantly for some of us, it seems losing, our F1 fantasy review. And for Budapest, Doors by Gunther Steiner took the lead with What's the Racing Point and Take a Stroll. These were all by the same guy, with 236 points as the highest scoring teams. Clean sweep for John Silla there. On the Cubs, P7, Timo's podcast team, P11, Extra Magnifico, Terrestrii, P17, JB Racing, P20, Full Send, the Pit, P37, and Jaffa Cake Racing, P36. This was a pants weekend for us, really. Well, certainly a pants weekend for me by the look of things.
Yeah, I was looking to see who was in your teams, and I just thought, oh yeah, you definitely didn't check these back at any point because you forgot some truly weak links in all of them. And I was quite amazed because the podcast team for me, P11 is probably the highest it's been all season. I went to look where it was overall, and that's probably its high point for the season. It's in the unmentionable categories near the greatest moustache later on.
Let me just log in and see who I actually had in my team and quite how bad that might have been.
You were second to last, so pretty bad.
Yeah, but I'm going to add some context to it, some detail. Ellie, mate, you were saying something.
I was just saying a few races ago, I added George Russell, and since then he's DNF and then just at this race.
What is it with you and cursing drivers, whether it's being there, whether it's buying their merch, whether it's putting them in your fantasy team? You just seem to have an inevitable ability to do this.
I'm fascinated to see what she's going to do with the Dan Ticketon merchandise I bought her.
I seem to have powers, but I haven't yet figured how to use these powers for good.
Have you secretly got Ollie Bearman merch? Is that where the problems lie?
I can neither confirm or deny anything.
Strange. Anyway, I can't log into my F1 fantasy for the moment. The way internet is taking an age. So we'll move on to the overall standings, where Take a Stroll still leads 2,791 points. What's the Racing Point? 2,769. And Doors by Gunther Steiner, 2,689 points. JB Racing is in P11, On the Curbs, P13, Ellie May's podcast team, P19, and The Greatest Moustache down in P37. So that's roughly how things stand when it comes to our fantasy world. In the world of reality, though, that draws us to an end of this week's, I say this week's podcast, there'll be two this week because we're immediately jumping straight into the Belgian Grand Prix. That draws us to the end of our review of the Hungarian Grand Prix. In the meantime, Timo, where can the people find you?
Well, you can find me hopefully soon on Is It Fast, where I have some content from Formula E from this weekend as I try and put all of that into words. There's already a post with a few pictures up on Instagram that you should go and check out. And yeah, it was a throne there, so I claimed it as mine. That was quite fun.
Oh,
and
God,
in the meantime, on the Curbs,
powers.
I've got a couple of new episodes out there with Megan Mayer and another person from Motorsport later on in the week. So I'll keep that under my hat because the Megan Mayer one is the one I'm going to promote for now.
Lovely stuff.
American Drag Racer. There we go.
Ooh, fun. Ellie May, where can the people find you?
I have finally started editing my Goodwood photos. So I have got a post already out, so you should check that out. And a few more should be on the feed at some point. Not sure when, so I'll just keep you all in suspense.
As always.
And in the meantime, if you want more from me, I write for Classic Car Weekly. You can buy the latest issue, although I think by the time I've edited this and got this out, there'll be a new issue, which I can't remember what's in it because I didn't produce much of it because I was on holiday at the Hungarian Grand Prix, the pictures of which you can see, however, on my social media feeds at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. There's also my Goodwood shots up there. I've got more of them to come. I've just had my rolls of film come back from Goodwood as well, so there'll be plenty of 35mm goodness, as well as all the high-res digi stuff too. Otherwise, we will be back in a few short days with a preview for the Belgian Grand Prix as the F1 circus heads to Spa before the summer break. What fun.